Hi, welcome to another edition of the PCRF podcast. My name is Dave Page, and I'm a paramedic instructor at Denver Hills Community College and a paramedic at Allina EMS.
And I'm Josh Salzman, director of the Critical Care Research Center at Regent Hospital in St. Paul.
And Keith Wesley, I'm the medical director for Health East Medical Transportation here in St. Paul, Minnesota.
We're going to talk about the duration of resuscitation efforts and survival after in-hospital cardiac arrest, an observational study by Dr. Goldberger et al. It was published on September 5th, 2012 in The Lancet, and really is a retrospective review of a hospital registry, a resuscitation registry. And they took data from the year 2000 to 2008, identified 64,000 plus patients with cardiac arrests out of 435 U.S. hospitals. So large group. They did several regression analysis models to discover whether or not the length of resuscitation would really matter. Their findings, 31,000 or so out of the 64,000 patients achieved a return of spontaneous circulation, and 9,900 of those, so roughly 4%, survived to hospital discharge. I'm sorry, 15.4%. Sleep deprivation is definitely getting to me today. So this ought to be interesting. But on average, the resuscitation the median was 12 minutes compared with 20 minutes for non-survivors. And they, along with other comparisons in these two groups, noted that there's a higher likelihood of spontaneous return of pulse if, in fact, there was a longer resuscitation and longer, it looks like, than maybe even 25 minutes. So they conclude that perhaps it's time to go a little bit longer, to that the duration of the resuscitation could improve survival in high-risk populations in hospital cardiac arrest. So with that, I will open this up to general comments first. You like this thing?
Well, I think it is a good illustration of the use of registry data and the positives and negatives around the design and methodology of that type of study. Because it's available data, the limitation obviously is that there may be other questions or other factors that just aren't collected and aren't available. And one of those that we talked about was the actual downtime of the patient wasn't incorporated into this information. So even though they have witnessed versus unwitnessed, and you can use that kind of as a proxy for downtime, that's one factor that we know is associated with ROSC and with outcome. And because it's registry information, I assume that they just don't have that recorded and available. With that understanding, though, they really did have a thoughtful analysis plan in the modeling that they used. Really, I think, did a good job of grouping patients into the correct buckets and allowed for something that would be usable or is usable when you evaluate it in a paper format. So, you know, a couple of those factors I think are important just to have into or keep into consideration as we read through registry trials, especially ones that have such large volumes of data like this.
Yeah, that's the thing that got me is, you know, I think you can, with this number of patients, you could make any numbers sort of match up. I get worried about mumbo jumbo math, fuzzy math. No offense to this group, just thinking, you know, we might find all sorts of associations if we were looking for them with this large of a sample size. Yeah. And this kind of messy I won't call it messy, but I guess
complex.
It's complex. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you know, part of me thinks the AHA guidelines changed in 2005.
Yep.
So I don't know about you guys, but I think we had tremendous changes in the way we did resuscitation after 2005 in terms of, you know, compressions and rates, et cetera, and focus. And, you know, this thing spans from 2000 to 2008. And, you know, it's sort of messy. It'd be interesting to see if they stratified the data and just took 2005 to 2008, and they had different results than 2000 to 2005.
Yep.
If they got implemented as quickly as you would hope. So more like, you know, give them a year to run it in, and then 2006 on might be different. But, yep. I mean, I don't know. The Lancet is a really great journal, and I think usually look for really good stuff out of here. So it perked my ears up, but it just because there's an association doesn't mean there's a cause and effect. So maybe the longer the resuscitations were going on, the more the resuscitation team thought that the patient was more viable.
Yeah, I think you guys are right. it's difficult to, one, what's the relevance of this study to pre-hospital care? You know, the fact is that they took all hospitalized patients, and if you actually look at table one, if you're resuscitated for whatever length of time in the ICU, you're more likely to survive. So, you know, again, what's the situation in the ICU? They were more likely to be intubated. They were more likely to have invasive monitoring. You know, I think we have to come back to what was the purpose of starting this registry, and it was the Get With The Guidelines program, which was based upon the studies that showed that in-hospital cardiac arrest was not being performed to the guidelines, mm-hmm. and that hands-off time was approaching 50%. And so I was a little surprised that since this was the purpose of this registry, then nowhere in this data is the CPR performance, mm-hmm. because isn't that really the issue?
Right.
I mean, I guess we're led to assume that the CPR performance for these 8 years was the same in these 60,000 patients. I'm not sure I believe that, because that's kind of what the studies that Get With The Program or Get With The Guidelines came about from. So I would have liked to have seen CPR efficiency controlled for, and then look at is there a difference?
Yeah,
because there are a lot of things in here that were associated with improved resuscitation, and that was if this was a cardiac arrest from trauma. The longer you worked it, the more likely you were to get it back.
Well, that's
okay,
counterintuitive.
Well, that's you know, that's non-VFib VTAC arrest. That's trauma. So again, you know, when you're doing with a large data registry. You're right. It's very easy to come up with a whole list of associated findings, but to put this purely to work them harder, you're more likely to get them back. I think that might be a little simplistic of an interpretation of this very complex data.
Yeah, I think it's really important that whole idea of what's clinically significant and relevant versus what is statistically shown to be different is important. Particularly, like you've pointed out, Dr. Wesley, when you look at the tables that are included in here, almost every factor is different for those different quartiles, or is statistically different among the quartiles that they've divided. But when you look at the actual percentages across those columns and rows, it's not that different. And if you look at the raw numbers as well. So I think those are important things as a reader to just keep in the front of your mind, that those differences, although they look impressive, may not really be practically different and really impact things.
Yeah.
I do think that it's interesting that our pre-hospital care, at least in our area, has been performing 30 minutes of resuscitation
right.
for patients in the
right.
field for a long time.
I
think even with all of these other factors and potential shortcomings of the analysis, it may actually support the fact that a longer resuscitation as has been done in a lot of EMS systems across the country for many years, really is the optimal timing, yeah, and that there's a little benefit past that.
I love that that part of this, and you know, I'm guilty of this too. So we have this great study that actually shows what we wanted, what we're doing right now is maybe good, right? So we extended these scene times, and we say 30 minutes, we got to work them, and we think we're doing pretty good, and intuitively our pre-hospital numbers are looking like, you know, the longer we're there, we should really actually work them to the end. And it takes a while to prime the pump, get everything circulated. Maybe we get returns of pulse better, et cetera, et cetera. So I want to believe it. And I want this study to show. And I want to bring it to Dr. Wesley and say, Dr. Wesley, I think we should be resuscitating people longer. And so I want to love this paper, and I want to show it around and go, see, now this is one of the reasons why we should be resuscitating for 30 minutes or longer. And then I just feel like this one in particular, you know, my medical director is going to sit down and go, well, this one in particular doesn't really show me that.
Well, actually, if you took it by the strict interpretation, it would say if you're VFib, VTAC, if you don't get them back in 10 minutes, you're not going to get them back.
Yeah, they're going to get them back at all.
so stop. But if they're non-VF, then work them longer.
Yes.
And you're more likely.
Yes.
And that actually was published 2 months ago in Resuscitation, that was looking specifically at PEA systole and showed that prolonged resuscitation with those patients is improved survival. Now, again, it didn't reach statistical significance, but they made the point of, is that clinical significance?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I'm going, you know, the difference between 2% and 4%,
That could be a few hundred people, depending on your sample size.
Yeah, if you did that all across the country, that would be
that's
huge.
People. Yeah.
And so, you know, we continue to do it, you know, minimum 30 minutes resuscitation on non-VFVT. But, you know, kind of looking at this, go, well, all right, we have a 45-minute minimal resuscitation for VT. I wonder if maybe we need to pull back from that and go, you know, if you're not going to get them back in 30 minutes, you're probably not going to get them back in 45.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, how long
it's
do you
work? It's messy
work?
Because, you know what, I think what we know today about therapeutic hypothermia and protecting the brain upon reperfusion, we may be getting to be a little bit more experts at what happens when we've got ROSC. And so these downtimes and these prolonged resuscitations, if it's good CPR, we've got automated devices that are getting good perfusion, suddenly I'm not so sure that prolonged resuscitation isn't so great. And then I would ask you, now, because there are just too many new variables in these conversations. For example, did these patients go to the cath lab, and did some of these massive MIs that they might have worked for 15, 20 minutes ever got a chance? Because, gosh, with an automated device, could they have gone up to the cath lab, get that artery cleaned out? Suddenly we restart a heart and we've got perfusion and circulation there. Or do we get ROSC back, send him up to the cath lab, do the same thing, and then we improve and combine it with therapeutic hypothermia? I think this is a bit of a simplistic look at a very complex problem with a lot of big numbers that it's just too much in the soup. You know, it just gets
muddy.
Well, I think
that's really a good point. And if it would be interesting if they were to drill down just on that 20% of their population in here that were admitted for an MI.
Right.
And let's just report on that 20%, those that had VFVT arrests, what percentage went on for a rescue angioplasty.
And, right.
You know, I mean, there's a huge amount of potential information here, because you're right. I mean, when you look at, okay, well, that's 20%, so that means the other 80% were in there for non-cardiac-related things, and actually 6% were trauma. All right, so let's take those out because we don't think about cardiac arrest for trauma. Stroke was 5%, and, you know, hypotension or hypoperfusion was listed as 30%, so I'm assuming that must be – but it's not septic because they had septicemia as a separate group.
Right.
So,
cardiogenic shock.
Yeah,
and
are these people?
So, right. Fascinating.
I think it's like – our common criticism of most studies, and that is we need to know a little bit more about the people that we're studying before we can even consider making a cause and effect and a clear recommendation based upon the finding.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, good discussion. Thank you all, and thanks for tuning in.